This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is almost 6:14. You are with Kelvin, Cam, and Ayman on the evening edition. And we're now about to move to our next story, where we're discussing the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or RCEP, and what it means for Malaysia. So ASEAN and other countries, including China, Japan, and Australia, have agreed on plans which could make RCEP the world's biggest trade agreement.
So the member countries are planning to sign the agreement next year, and the RCEP should be able to promote trade between the member countries by reducing tariffs and encourage businesses with the intention to build supply chains within the region.
So there are some criticisms. Reuters, when they spoke to some economists, they argued that it's not a high quality treaty because it doesn't cover or harmonize as much. Reuters also argues that it lacks provisions for liberalizing state enterprises or protecting workers and the environment. This is also according to US Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross. He called it a very low-grade treaty. So this is one that has been making the rounds, especially after 7 years of grueling negotiations. Mm-hmm. India has decided to step out.
And, of course, this is the downgraded version from the original, the TPP,
yep.
Where America pulled out. And I don't necessarily get the impression that this is a thing that the people's in the region, and it would involve actually what, one third of the world's population.
Yeah. So if this deal does happen, if everyone signs on, which they've said they will do it by 2020, it would create one of the world's largest free trade zones. The RCEP countries make up about 46% of the global population, and it's worth about 24% of global GDP.
Yeah, with India, it would have been like half of the world's population in that trade agreement.
But there's not necessarily a sense of clamor for this. In fact, there's more suspicion, I think, amongst the peoples of the region. It's not exactly obviously clear who the winners would be, and fears are that we would be amongst the losers.
Well, I mean, when it comes to like international trade and things like multilateral agreements, there are arguments that say that the more developed countries in the agreement would benefit more because their products are presumably better quality, for example, or even more well known. So they would benefit in terms of being able to penetrate into markets that maybe they wouldn't have been able to penetrate before this. So, for example, if a local business in Cambodia has to compete to sell the products with like Australia, Japan, South Korea and whatnot, it may be not so good for the smaller local businesses, but in terms of from the perspective of the consumers, obviously they would have more choices in terms of what they want to consume.
But equally though, if say a Japanese company has a factory presently in Japan, it would then be able to open a factory in, I don't know, Malaysia or Indonesia, manufacturing the same thing and then selling it back into Japan without having to pay any tariffs.
Well, I'm not so clear on that, honestly. But thankfully, we do have an expert on the line where we've got Dr. Cassie Lee, Senior Fellow at the ISIS Yusof Ishak Institute. Dr. Cassie, thank you so much for joining us on the show. What does the RCEP set out to achieve?
RCEP is a free trade agreement, essentially. So what it seeks to achieve is actually greater economic integration. So it will have a number of chapters that are basically devoted to enable greater trade and investment flows between the participating country. So by making it easier for these flows to take place. That's essentially what trade agreements like RCEP are.
And what impact will the deal have on Malaysia?
Well, Malaysia is a small and very open economy, so trade is extremely important. And given that characteristic, of course, access to markets, both in terms of selling and buying goods from different places, and also getting investments from other countries and putting our own investment in other countries are extremely important. So trade agreements basically help the Malaysian economy basically access market and make its markets accessible by other countries.
And then from what we currently know about the RCEP, are there clear gains and losses that Malaysia can expect?
Well, the agreement itself, the text of the agreement has not been released, right? So we do know the 20 chapters has been signed, the text has been agreed to. And this covers a really wide range of areas that you can actually find in also other countries, right? In other agreements that we have signed. So you've got things like the usual suspect, trade in goods, rules of origin, custom procedures, standards, trade in services, even areas like investment, IP laws, e-commerce, competition law, even government procurement. So these are some of the chapters that have been agreed upon. We do not know exactly what coverage, but we do know that generally it has been agreed that the coverage will be less comprehensive and intensive than the ones in CPTPP, right, which Malaysia has signed but not ratified yet. So it's difficult to say exactly what are the losses and gains. And typically when you sign an agreement like that, the effects are not just short-term, but it's also for long-term. For example, investment flow is something that would take place over a much longer period of time. And the gains from investment flow are extremely difficult to estimate.
So some argue that the RCEP is not seen as a high-quality trade agreement compared to the TPP. U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross also said that it's a very low-grade treaty. Why is that the case?
Well, of course, this is a lower quality than CPTPP. This is one of the major characteristics, and this has been known from the very beginning. This is a level at which many countries are comfortable signing on, compared to the CPTPP and even compared to the FTAs that are signed by the EU. The reason for this is that the different countries in the region, including ASEAN member countries, their level of development is extremely uneven. If you look at the GDP per capita, especially in comparison with the other developed countries outside ASEAN that are involved in RCEP, for example, Japan, Korea, right, and China, as well as Australia and New Zealand. So given the different level of development, especially in, for example, the services sector, one would expect that it would be difficult to get a very, very comprehensive and deep kind of FTA.
India stepping out has caused some waves. What were their reasons for choosing not to participate in RCEP?
Well, India, the main fear that India sort of had was the cheap imports from China flooding its market. There's tremendous amount of domestic political pressure, both from the agriculture and the manufacturing and the retail sector, to basically protect the Indian market for fear of inundation of goods from big economies like China. Essentially, that is the main fear.
Is that perhaps a concern that Malaysia should be sharing as well?
Well, it's quite a different kind of setting, because Malaysia, unlike India, is a much smaller economy and much more dependent on export and import. And it has a greater linkage in terms of the global value chain compared to India. So you can't really compare the Indian economy with the Malaysian economy. The level of development is quite different. The presence of multinational and the importance of FDI is quite different in these two economies, historically and even until today.
With India stepping out of the deal, are the signing parties losing out on anything?
Of course, they will lose market access to the Indian market. But having said that, if you look at the Indians as a share of export, for ASEAN economy, it's not that significant, actually. So I'm looking at some statistics. For example, the market share of India in ASEAN trade and goods, it's actually less than 3%, slightly less than 3%, compared to countries like China, which is about 6 times more important, Japan about 3 times more important than India, South Korea about 2 times, EU again about 3 to 4 times. India would be roughly equivalent to the combined share of Australia and New Zealand. So yeah, of course it's a loss, but it's not a major drawback, especially for ASEAN member countries.
And what would this mean for our trade relations with China and the US?
Well, both China and US are already major trading partners, and China being part of RCEP means that the trends towards greater economic integration with the Chinese economy will, I wouldn't say it's accelerate, but certainly a bit more positive because of the RCEP. And also because not just the link to China directly, but the link to China indirectly through the global value chain that involves China and Malaysia and third countries in Southeast Asia.
Did China walk away with more to gain than the rest of the partners?
I mean, when you undertake a negotiation like this, it's not the kind of zero-sum calculation country A gains more than country B. There's a bit of trade-off in different areas. And ultimately, the reason why countries should sign is that overall, even though you have some trade-off losses in some area, but the gain would generally exceed what you basically have traded off. So that's the idea. And the trade-off is also not just a static one-off, you know. It's also a dynamic trade-off, you know, because investment, for example, as I mentioned, it takes a fair bit of time to take place, investment flows. So the trade-off is also not only across different sectors, but across time as well.
Does the deal reflect any decline in the U.S. positions, in America's position as a main economy that other countries would want to trade with?
It's not that we must make a difference between U.S. as a country and U.S. multinationals. So that distinction is important. The U.S. was never part of RCEP to begin with, and it withdrew from CPTPP. But being not in RCEP does not necessarily mean that this is isolating the U.S. in terms of trade in this part of the world. What it actually means is that the countries that are participating have greater ambition or greater interest in integrating the economies regionally, I think. So that should be seen as the right way to see this, I think. Not necessarily a zero-sum game, I think. That's not useful.
Next year, we'll face some market dampeners like a potential Brexit, as well as the ongoing trade war between China, US and Japan, Korea. So will this have any sort of impact on the economic outlook for next year and perhaps the next 5 years?
Well, definitely it will have an impact. The uncertainty, based on what you have said, will still be there. Some of it, we do not know how it will be resolved. We do not know yet how Brexit will be resolved. Even the U.S.-China trade dispute, there will be another attempt in the U.S., I believe, for the trade negotiators for two countries to meet. So it's far from clear what the external environment will be like. What trade agreements such as RCEP provide is an opportunity to basically participate in trade at a sort of improve sort of trade prospects among the participating members. And this kind of opportunities would be welcomed by countries that have agreed to sign to this RCEP.
Dr. Cassie, thank you so much for weighing in. That was Dr. Cassie Lee, Senior Fellow at the ICES Yusof Ishak Institute, walking us through the RCEP. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.